Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor PCAT, Pacific Center for Advanced Technology Training.
Welcome to the new reality edition of Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, where we serve you the first bite of today's science, technology, and innovation. I'm Bert Lum, and on today's show, we've got Daniel Richardson. He's the founder and CEO of Makali'i Metrics, and we're here to talk about data gathering and establishing Hawaii's first soil testing lab. Hey, Daniel, welcome to Bite Marks Cafe.
Bert, mahalo for having me.
And you know, I gotta. We'll talk more about the soil testing lab. But I do want to congratulate you for actually launching the first commercial testing lab. So, and we'll get into what's the opportunity, what's the market, why hasn't something like that happened sooner? But I do want to get into a little bit of your background and how you got into this. I met you a while back. Learned a little bit about Makali'i Metrics. And you, your partner, Kuha'o Zane, how did you guys kind of like hook up?
Yeah, so my background came through the College of Tropical Agriculture, mm-hmm. UH. Did my undergrad and master's there with some work in the Maui sugarcane fields in between, and then some work in private ag after grad school. And then kind of got invited into a working group. Kuha'o Zane was a part of it, Kamuela Inos, Dr. Jonathan Dienick from College of Ag, and Dr. Susan Crow. And they were kind of working around this idea of how does today's science, soil science, connect with cultural importance, cultural initiatives. And that's where the group started. And out of that group kind of came this idea of the ideation of a space like Makali'i Metrics. The name wasn't chosen yet, but how could we ideate what a soil lab in Hawaii should look like, given Hawaii's cultural importance, agricultural past, and current place in the agricultural field?
Now, you mentioned Kamu'inus. Was this kind of a UH gathering of, the minds?
I think it started that way. And then Kuha'o Zane got it invited. I was not working at UH at the time, though still somewhat affiliated. And so I got invited into the group. And so it became sort of an interdisciplinary type of think tank, mm-hmm, I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then and Kuha'o is related to Sig Zane. So he's very kind of tied to the cultural aspect of a lot of this.
Very much so. And brings that Kanaka'ole genealogy as well.
Mm-hmm,
Yeah.
Now, as a working group, I can see a lot of brainstorming, a lot of ideation. What was it that really culminated the formation of a company?
Yeah, I think there was such a demand happening. At that time, there were a lot of grants happening, a lot of intention about how to approach this science through a cultural lens. And so the demand at that time was big enough, and the amount of samples being shipped to the continent was enough to say, there are some wrinkles in our efficiencies here. But at the same time, if we are going to iron out those wrinkles and make this happen here, we want to do it in the right way.
So was there a recognition that it's better to start something here as opposed to we're so accustomed to just sending it off and having another lab, do the testing and send us the results? There was enough momentum to say, hey, we should do this here. But why did it take so long to come to that realization?
Yeah, the momentum was there. I think it definitely is and was not the path of least resistance, because it's tough starting something new in general. And then you tack on starting something new in Hawaii. It's that much more complicated, shipping logistics of equipment, the cost associated with starting a business here. There's a lot that goes into it. So it definitely was not the easier option.
Mm-hmm.
But I think given what we were talking about and given our vision, it is the right option, because you know, we're one point in time right now, and ideally this is going to be passed on. And so what we're starting today will be iterated and transform hopefully into something that is very appropriate and fits Hawaii very well.
Now, obviously, when you're starting a business, you want to assess the marketplace. And if you go out and look at who's in the market for soil testing, and let's say they're all pretty used to sending it away.
Yeah.
Was there anything that you could say to them that, hey, we could do it better, faster, cheaper? I mean, what was the real kind of selling point at that point?
Yeah, I think that the turnaround time is one, because, you know, shipping adds days, week plus to any analysis. But also the community support for an OEV-founded group here in Hawaii, the desire of folks to support local, even if it's something new, was overwhelming. People are excited about it. They want to support something that is rooted here in Hawaii. And so that's where I think we found more support than just the raw numbers of turnaround time, cost savings, that kind of stuff. Was, hey, this is keeping dollars in Hawaii. This is starting new jobs in Hawaii. This is starting new opportunities here. And people support that.
You know, how would you describe your typical kind of customer? Are they developers that are looking at, you know, developing some land? Is it perhaps farmers that are looking at farming a particular kind of crop? I remember in the olden days when, you know, developing was happening out in the, let's say, the Mililani and Kapolei kind of area. And that was previously a lot of pineapple. And then they had all this, you know, heptachlor and all that kind of stuff. Is a lab here in Hawaii helpful in terms of identifying that kind of stuff early on so that that can be mitigated? What is your typical kind of cross-section of a customer that's coming in and say, hey, you know, Makali'i Metrics, can you tell me what's up with my soil?
Yeah. So that's specifically contamination. We are working towards, but at the moment we're more set up for soil health and soil fertility. So can my plants grow successfully in this space? And the customers that are interested in that are a huge spectrum. So all the way from auntie in the backyard trying to grow, you know, make the mango tree a little healthier or grow a lay garden or something, all the way to, you know, 100 plus acre projects coupled with USDA funding. We are there to support all of those projects here in Hawaii, and ideally support it in a way where any given project no longer needs to export those dollars out of Hawaii. We can keep it here. And so we've just had a huge range, even, you know, folks that are developing highways and runways for airports, they need pH testing, they need sieving, stuff like that. So we get a lot of different asks based on our lab's capabilities.
And and I think the environments that you typically would test could vary as well, right? I mean, the typical farm, you might think, oh, you know, you're just taking some soil and doing some testing. But if you start looking at, let's say, lo'i, and the soil or the, you know, the mud that's coming from the lo'i, you're testing that, and then maybe comparing it to what might be downstream, that's pretty informative as well.
Absolutely. And I think that's another reason why having a space here like Makali'i Metrics is so important, because Hawaii has an incredible diversity of landscapes, of soil types, of crop types, where, you know, basically there's 12 soil orders across the continent, across the world, and Hawaii has 10 just on the island of Oahu. Some people say there's 11 across Hawaii. The 11th one would be what's called a gelisol, and that's a permafrost soil. So I've heard some people say that they can find those at the top of Mauna Kea and stuff. I never seen them, but I know we at least have 10 of the 12 soil varieties here in Hawaii, and it's just a perfect natural lab to learn and do this science here.
I do want to hear how you have woven in culture into the science of soil testing, because I know, you know, as a as a testing lab, I mean, there's a lot of science involved, but Makali'i Metrics has been very conscientious about the cultural connection, as you mentioned earlier, you know, with the working group and the ideation. So I want to hold that thought. We'll be right back at this short break to continue our conversation with Daniel Richardson from Makali'i Metrics. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributors Ulupono Initiative and Ruby Tuesday Hawaii.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. I'm Bert Lum, and if you're just joining us, we're talking to Daniel Richardson. He's the founder and CEO of Makali'i Metrics, and he's here to talk about data gathering and the science of doing a soil testing lab. And of course, I want to kind of ask you, Daniel, I mean, you mentioned earlier about the working group that sort of brought you and Kuhao together, and it was a really, I think, a mind-expanding experience where, you know, how do you bring culture into something that might have been viewed upon as strictly scientific?
Right.
And I was fortunate to go to your opening, and I thought it was really, really great how you folks kind of incorporated some tradition into that experience. How do you extend that into the process of testing outside of just being conscientious of the cultural importance? How do you start to weave in the philosophy of culture into what you produce in the lab?
That's a great question. And I think that's a question we continue to ask ourselves every day, and one that we will always continue to ask. Because like you said, it's almost like we're bridging two worlds together, and where they touch obviously is it's few and far between. And so at the moment, you know, the way that we approach spaces and relationships and hear the stories of each space is a given. You know, we want to make a point to show up to that space with our ears open and our mouths shut, and mm-hmm. learn as much about that space from the folks that steward it as we can before we even begin our sampling efforts. So I think building those relationships with the people in the space is one. But the other, you know, like you mentioned, having the benefit of working with someone like Kuha'o and his wealth of resources and the Edith Kanaka'ole Foundation, where they can access Oli and Mele and Hula of specific spaces across Hawaii, we can get into where it's available. I mentioned, you know, the 12 soil varieties. Those mm-hmm. are all built through different weathering patterns and different geological patterns. And so a lot of the times, you know, one example would be a certain space has wind names or rain names associated with that space. And so how can we connect those names to the weathering of that soil and the genesis of that soil, and then be able to connect that and offer that story back to the person stewarding that space.
Mm-hmm.
That's just one example. And others are, you know, trying to identify planting practices that are specific to those spaces, pre-plantation, that supported communities in that space. Can we reestablish those practices, measure them, and put, you know, apply these, let's say, modern tools, our the instruments in our lab, and try and understand why those practices were so successful in those mm-hmm. spaces.
You know, and you said you had spent some time at Sitar, right?
Yeah.
And maybe this is kind of olden days, but, you know, there has been always some decision on the part of somebody in ag or, you know, to bring in an introduced species to do some mitigation. And
yeah.
And oftentimes it's done in the guise of kind of a Western scientific methodology that would help. As an example that comes to mind is let's say, mitigating soil erosion. So let's bring in albizia and let's plant those all around the place and it'll hold the soil. And then there was probably very little consultation that took place with any cultural practitioners or, you know, people who are more aware of what is it, what's the contribution of this particular, you know, piece of land to the water table. So there's always been this sort of conflict between, you know, Western methodologies and the cultural knowledge of the place. Has that changed, you think, over time? I mean, I'm thinking olden days, right? Because I'm kind of old, yeah. So it might be olden day kind of things. But has that sentiment changed, you think?
I do. I think the value system is changing with the generation today and the decision makers today. I see that value system changing. And what you, that example you brought up makes me think of that, you know, new knowledge with the K in parentheses, as in K-N-E-W, knowledge. Because, you know, those are things that our kupuna knew, which was to not harvest all of the trees on the mountainside so there isn't erosion happening into your watersheds. And there is no need to bring in these fast-growing species. You just, you know, you're managing that system in a more sustainable way. That's just something that was known. And so I think I see those practices as a mitigation to the disruption. And then it just kind of cascades from there.
So your company, Makali'i Metrics, is really tightly coupled with Purple Maya, right? Purple Maya Foundation.
Yes.
They are an investor of Makali'i Metrics.
Correct. Yeah.
And I'm happy to see more of that. I mean, Hohonu is another one that has its kind of roots born in sensors and data gathering. But, you know, folks like Brian Glazer, I mean, they kind of really focus in on some of the intersection of culture and you know, the idea of how can they tell the story using data. So how has Purple Maya helped influence, you know, where you folks are going?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's been an amazing partnership. They saw the vision very clearly. And because of them, we were able to open our doors. We were able to outfit our space with the top of the line equipment. And because of them, we're open for business.
So Purple Maya, hats off to them.
Hats off to them, yeah.
Well, I do want to talk more about, you know, the role that they sort of play in the development of Makali'i Metrics. And I also want to kind of get into some of the ideas of another relationship that you have, you know, like with Camuinos and these indigenous data hubs and what they might reveal. So we'll hold that thought. We'll be right back at a short break to continue our conversation with Daniel Richardson of Makali'i Metrics. This is Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, whose contributors help Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Honolulu Waldorf School.
Welcome back. This is Bite Marks Cafe. I'm Bert Lum right here on Hawaii Public Radio, HPR 1. If you're just joining us, we're talking to Daniel Richardson. He's the founder and CEO of Makali'i Metrics. We're talking about data gathering and of course, you know, establishing the first soil testing lab. And of course, right before the break, we were talking about Purple Maya and sort of their influence. And, you know, they've always been a very interesting organization, helping to bring together the idea of you know, indigenous traditional knowledge and technology.
Right.
You know, they've always had these events that it could be a, you know, like a code challenge or a hackathon or some kind of ideation. And I enjoy those. Now, were you guys part of any of those programs?
We were, yeah. That's kind of how we started with them, was a hackathon.
Okay.
Yeah, we had a bunch of soil carbon data that I had collected as an undergrad. And someone ran that through a spectroscopy machine, which produced a lot of wavelengths. And we, in that hackathon, built a model that could predict the carbon content of soils in Hawaii based on the spectral signal. And so real fast, you know, if you want to analyze the carbon in soil. It can take, you know, you have to dry it, grind it, weigh it, run it through machines. That could take a couple days. With spectroscopy, you can kind of dry it, grind it, and scan it. And it's kind of a rapid form of quantifying soil carbon.
Mm-hmm,
and
mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that was kind of our first link with Purple, was building that model successfully. And from there, it just took off.
Now, you know, Purple has been, you know, very involved with getting young people involved, getting, you know, interns involved. And you said earlier that, you know, this is a long game.
Yes.
And from a Makali'i metric standpoint, you guys are starting it, but, you know, it's going to be years that people are going to perhaps grow this industry.
Right.
So how do you see getting more young people involved? And the folks at Purple Mile were telling me that they're bringing in some interns. And, you know, typically when an organization tells me they're going to bring in interns, you know, it's like one or two. But Purple is bringing in like a dozen.
Yeah.
Like, yeah. That's kind of like plenty.
Incredible. Plenty. It's plenty. Yeah. It's plenty.
And you're going to take on about, what, three or four of them or something?
Yeah. I think there's two or three working fully on the Purple side, kind of on our user-facing end, the dashboard. And then we have two or three going to start specifically in the lab and tackling some questions in that space related to the software and the hardware, the instruments that we're running. How can we get them engaged on testing things in the lab that are actually going to be applied in the real world, and engage these Haumana by asking them why are they here? What are they interested in? And how can we leverage this space, this equipment, this vision to answer some of the questions they have?
I mean, this is really great, and I'm glad you guys are working on these kinds of projects, but I wouldn't imagine them to be necessarily a paid customer, right? So how do you balance between a really kind of a cool project, but then also you have to have the paid customers that are paying the bills?
Yes.
Is there a balance that you've drawn?
We've struck a balance, and, you know, given all this, we are open for business. We are getting busier and busier, so make sure to send us your samples quickly. But it does enable us to host these types of internship opportunities. And, you know, we are able to pay, but at the same time, folks are interested in this enough where people also want to volunteer their time and learn more about the space, whether that's a tour or one day, or whether they want to spend a couple weeks learning what we do and learning how to do it themselves. Because I think it's no surprise that here in Hawaii, there's a huge passion for aina-based science, especially when it connects to Ike Kupuna.
Mm-hmm.
And so if we can open our space to folks to ideate projects that surround that, people get really engaged.
Now, you mentioned, well, you know, the example of doing some testing around Lo'i and seeing how that perhaps changes as you go kind of downstream.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one example that comes to mind is Puhonua Waimanalo, and how, you know, up in the foothills, there's a really, you know, I got to give credit to folks like Brandon Maka'ava'ava, who has created, or actually helped to clear so that you could actually see the terraces.
Yeah.
You know, and are you folks involved with some of that soil testing of that particular area and how it might inform what's happening kind of like downstream?
Yeah, we've been in that space before. We've tested some sites, and we're actually going there this coming Friday with a group of Haumana from Kamehameha over on Hilo.
Mm-hmm.
And we'll be testing some more, asking that group of folks and their kumu what questions they might have after seeing the space. And see if we can use our space to kind of answer those questions.
So that goes back to the question, is that a passion project or is that something that can be, I don't know, fundable or?
Definitely fundable. Yeah, definitely fundable.
So that is something that you can pursue and actually has some grant opportunities or something that could result in seeing how you can analyze, you know, one, let's say a location upstream and compare it to, let's say, data that you gather downstream.
Right. Yep. Those are fundable types of projects, or comparing land use history across a small space, you know, one that might have been under plantation agriculture versus one that avoided it somehow. How does that affect soil carbon? How does that affect nutrient availability, water holding capacity of the soil? Those types of projects people are interested in.
How are you going to hold back all the people going to call you up and say, hey, I want you, Makali'i Metrics, to come and test my ahupua'a?
Hey, we don't want to hold them back. Give us the call.
Okay. Now, Kamo'ino's over at the, you know, the what, Office of Indigenous Knowledge at UH. They have something called the Indigenous Data Hub.
Yes.
What are you guys involved with that? And what is your kind of deliverable?
Yeah, we work closely with Kamo'ino's, fortunately, great person, and their space over at CreateX over West Oahu with Dr. Kari Noi. We work closely with them. We want to walk in parallel with their philosophies on Indigenous data and data sovereignty. And they inform kind of the way that we approach these spaces and the way that we do our science.
And then I would imagine that, you know, with the multitude of connections that you have through Kamo'ino's and Donovan at Purple Maya, I mean, there's a lot of opportunity opening up.
These guys are heavy hitters, and I'm just a hole digger. Super fortunate to be linked with them and Kuhat Ozein. It can be intimidating, but very fortunate.
Yeah, you know, like I said, I went to the opening and I was really quite impressed. Now, are you doing anything on Nibba Islands? I mean, what's the plan?
Yeah, so we work wide. We have a project with DLNR. Sends us last year, 2025. We sampled every island except for Ni'ihau and Ko'olawe. So, if the project warrants it, we will take time, go over there, walk the space with the practitioners and the stewards. And we don't let, you know, the channels between islands stop us from going.
And then, you know, of course, this is the blue continent. So how far beyond Hawaii do you have in mind?
That's the question. So we did recently have NRCS, USDA come through our lab space and ideate how we can position the space as a reference lab for the Pacific Island region, as that is seen through the federal lens. But through other connections with, we're involved with the group Abundant Intelligences. We've gone to Aotearoa, spoken with their folks, and just, again, ears open, trying to learn as much as we can about these spaces, these people, these planting practices, and ideally situate ourselves in a way that can serve all of that.
So where can people find out more about Makali'i Metrics? I mean, you know, open the floodgate, have them all call you up.
Yeah,
you know,
call us up. Makali'imetrics.com is a good starting point, and our email, phone number, everything's on there.
Okay, I'll put that up on our show notes. Daniel Richardson is the founder and CEO of Makali'i Metrics, and of course, congratulations on establishing Hawaii's first soil testing lab. Hey, Daniel, thanks for joining me today.
Mahalo, Bert.
And thank you for listening to Bite Marks Cafe. Join us next week when we'll talk about the next Mana Up cohort. If you miss any part of this edition, you can find the podcast of tonight's show on bitemarkscafe.org. Our engineer is David Chong. You can catch us on HBR One every Friday or anytime via the HBR app or your favorite podcast application. In the meantime, you stay safe. You stay awesome. We'll see you next week on another edition of Bite Marks Cafe.
Support for Bite Marks Cafe comes from the HPR Local Talk Show Fund, which helps Hawaii Public Radio sustain and grow its locally produced talk shows. Mahalo to contributor Furniture Plus Design.